Today's Survivor Recap is sponsored by TrueCar. You know, it can be difficult to find clarity after the Survivor merge, and it can also be difficult to find clarity when you're trying to figure out the price of a new car, unless you're shopping on TrueCar.com or with the TrueCar mobile app, because with TrueCar, you could select all of the features you want for a brand new car, not some Keith Nail tuk-tuk that he's been driving all around Cambodia, but the car that you want with everything in it. You could see what other people are paying for that same exact car down to the zip code. Some people have saved over $3,000 using TrueCar off of MSRP without any hassles or headaches. It's how car buying was always meant to be. Don't be one of these old school car shoppers. Shop for a car the new school way. Over 2 million cars have been sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and there are over 10,000 dealers in that TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. You'll work directly with one of them when you visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app and start saving. TrueCar, never overpay. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's only letting his kids play with voting blocks, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited to be back this week with the Recap Podcast. And today we're going to be speaking with Nalia Dennis from Survivor Marquesas. So very excited for that one. Again, special thanks to Josh Wiggler, who hosted this Recap Podcast last week with Marty Piombo. That's up on robisawebsite.com if you missed that one. We did our Survivor Know-It-Alls, of course, last night and broke down everything that happened after the episode and talked about all of these voting blocks that Stephen Fishback outlined. And then this morning, I got to speak with Kelly Wigglesworth, who I was not necessarily expecting to be sort of a chipper or excited to talk about the game, but she definitely got into some things with me. You could hear that exit interview on robhasawebsite.com. A little bit of a different format here today. So the first part you are listening to right now, you're locked in. Nalia Dennis is coming up here in just a couple of moments. The voicemail part of the show is going to be in a separate podcast that is going to be coming out on Friday morning with Bryce Isaiah. I've got all your voicemails lined up. And so we're going to be talking with him a little bit later on, but because I got to take my mom to the airport later on tonight, got to break it up into two pieces. So that is going to be coming to you shortly and hopefully might even be in your podcast feed by the time you're listening to this on Friday. So that's what's coming up here on the podcast. And of course, then we'll get back into our amazing race coverage as well this Friday night. So everything is coming your way here back at the end of my paternity leave. If you missed hearing last night, everybody is doing great. My wife, Nicole, is recovering very, very nicely. Our new son, Anthony, is here. He's doing great as well. So we are back and ready to go, locked in with more Survivor podcasts. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in this guest. This is a first-time RHAP guest, somebody from way back when, but somebody who's wanted to come on the show for quite some time. I think even at the reality rally from last year, we talked about eventually getting to do this. And I'm so happy that we finally get to bring this person into the podcast. Here she is, the runner-up from Survivor Marquesas, the great Nalia Dennis. Nalia, how are you?
Hey, I am so good. I'm so excited to do this. I've been dying to come on your podcast, so this is really exciting for me.
Good. Well, I'm excited to have you on. And really, around that time that you were at that reality rally, I heard from a few people that ran into you there, said, oh my God, you have to get Nalia on the show. She's a huge Survivor fan. She's still watching it. She knows the game. And so I'm glad we're finally able to do that.
You know, that was really a great event because it was the first event that I had really come back to since having kids and, you know, being married and traveling and going different places. So it was so awesome. You had the coolest Rob Has a Podcast team with Albert and Jessica. Yep. And yeah, Clayton. It was awesome.
Good. Well, glad to finally have you on board. I know there's a lot of people who are still big fans of yours from way back when, are very excited to hear from you. And I think that this is a great time to bring you in, as really we're sort of closing the book on, and I know Kimmy is still out there, but for all intents and purposes, I feel like Kelly Wigglesworth going out of the game and all this talk about this new evolution of the game, I feel like for this season, I feel like to a degree, we're sort of closing the book on old school Survivor.
Right. I could agree with you on that.
Yes.
And really, I mean, there's so many old school players who have played so many times now, you know, that it's actually really refreshing to, you know, see old school players come back that, you know, especially players who want to play. Like, I am dying to get back on this show. And really, I mean, I'm 35 years old. You know, I played when I was 21. So I'm still young, you know.
Yes.
Considered an old school player. So
you're even younger than me. So that means that you're especially young and spry.
Right. I was the youngest person at the time to have played Survivor. I was the first person to play in the 1980s, who was born in the 1980s. So
yeah,
I still feel pretty good about this.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll get into all that stuff about why this is the time that you want to get back into this as we go along. But let's just talk about this episode last night, because there was so much talk about this. Okay, this is now the game is being played in a new way. This is a new evolution of Survivor, because it's not alliances anymore. Now it's voting blocks, and it's just whatever's convenient for this particular vote. But Nalia, when I think about you, I always think back to that move back at the final nine in Survivor Marquesas, where your good buddy now, John Carroll, ended up going out of the game. And I feel like that was almost like after alliances were made, I felt like that was the first real evolution of the game at that point in time. Do you see anything happening now that you feel like is some sort of a similar shift in the game?
You know, the thing that struck me about last night is, you know, you have your players who, in my opinion, have been playing pretty safe this season. I mean, they've all had moments, you know, of greatness. But you've got Joe, you've got Tasha, Kimmy, and Keith, and they're all pretty under the radar right now. I think they've, you know, just been pretty comfortable in their, you know, big alliance. And now that that has been shaken up, I think it's going to cause major, I think the game's going to completely shift at this point. So to me, looking back on the, you know, old school way of playing and seeing this new evolution happen, absolutely. I mean, you've got Spencer, Fish, Jeremy, Kelly, Sierra, Abby. I mean, all very strong personalities, people who love the game, that want to see big moves being played, and now they're starting to take out those safe players. So, you know, always in Survivor, it seems like people who play it safe fly under the radar. I mean, they get pretty far, but I think they really shook it up last night by voting Kelly out, because she was definitely an under the radar player. And I was actually really surprised that they took her out last night. But I love that these big strategic game players are really just moving up and forcing this game to be played.
Yeah, it's very tricky to sort of isolate the reason why Kelly is out of the game at this point in time, because I feel like that there's been two things about how, you know, she's such a threat, but also she was somebody who was sort of under the radar, and she was going to go far if you let her go on into the game. And there's this talk, especially from some of the things that Jeff is saying. I read in his interview with Dalton Ross, he was really talking about how you can't just lay back anymore. Now you have to be making these big moves all along the way. And if you're not making the big moves, then you're not going to have the resume, and you're going to, you know, lose the game definitely. And sort of like, that's why Kelly is out of the game now, because she wasn't making big moves. Do you agree with that? Is that the reason why Kelly ultimately lost, is that it was a failure to make big moves?
You know, I don't think Kelly would have had any shot at the end. I mean, she hadn't put anything on her resume. She's been flying under the radar, playing this safe game this whole time. You know, looking back on Kelly's game, though, if you go back to season one, I mean, she made it to the end, and then she won the final four immunity challenges. And that's how she ended up, you know, in the final two with Richard missing it by one vote. And so I think that, you know, as far as, you know, she's still in good shape, and, you know, she contributed well to all the challenges. But I think it is all about the resume at this point. You know, you have to be willing to make those big moves. And I think, you know, it's almost like her name was thrown out there. And I think, you know, as long as it's not the other people, they're glad to just get rid of somebody, you know? So I think she kind of just got thrown out there, and everybody just said, okay, yeah, let's do this, you know? But really, she wasn't a strategic threat at all.
Yeah. I want to just pull this quote from Jeff Probst, because I thought it was interesting in this interview that he does with every week with Dalton Ross. And this sort of started under this idea of, did you like the move that Steven made? And spoiler, Jeff didn't love it. But he ends up talking about how, you know, the odds are not that great that you're going to win. If we start with 20 players, 19 of them are going to lose. That's a 95% chance that you will lose. Get this in your head. If you play Survivor, you will certainly lose. So this is why you have to play to win.
Right.
And he says that it means that anytime you have to make a big decision, you have to first make a series of assumptions and then base your move on those assumptions at the moment. And the days of trying to play safe and hide are also gone, because even if you manage to play safe, the jury will never respect you enough to award you the victory. And when you get home and realize that nobody ever remembers the runner up, you'll start to second guess your decisions and most likely end up regret not going for it.
Absolutely. Well, hello. I'm like the perfect product of that. Like, I had the worst tribal council speech ever. And that's something that I regretted, you know, these last 14 years. So, you know, you cannot play it safe anymore. And I think anybody going back in, especially as a second chance, that thinks that they're going to just get in this safe little alliance and fly under the radar, like, they are screwed. Like, there's no way that they will ever win that $1 million. Like, you have to come out gloves on, ready to play this game and, you know, be willing to do whatever it takes. I mean, you look right now at Sierra and Kelly, and it's so funny to me because even looking at them, you know, they're in this new voting block together with Abby. And you look at those two, and actually the three of them, and they would turn on each other at any moment. I mean, it's pretty clear that they're out there to make big moves, you know, to turn things upside down all the time. And I would imagine between those girls, there's not really even any trust. So I think the game, you just have to be willing to just move quick, move fast, jump in when you see an opportunity and get the ball rolling. Because, yeah, like you said, this safe gameplay is out the window now.
So you agree with everything that Jeff says?
I do.
He also adds, so take the burden off of your shoulders. If you play Survivor, you are most certainly going to lose. Let this free you up so you can play to win. You know, it's almost like a philosophical thing that he's saying, almost like that, you know, we are all going to die. So since you're probably, you know, almost definitely going to die anyway, right, you might as well just go out there and just like, you know, go for whatever.
Exactly. Well, I think that's a great way to look at it. I mean, Jeff says stuff like that, and you're going to get people that come out that are not going to be boring, because I don't think they're going to cast boring players anymore. You know, I think they're going to cast the Abbeys and the, you know, Spencers and the Kellys and people that are willing to just go out there and play hard. I don't even think you're going to get past casting if you're not willing to be like that.
Yeah.
Because it's lame. It's so boring to watch. I mean, I even look back on my season and I'm like, crap, you know, I was so young. Like, I was so boring at times, you know, and that is not who I am now. But I mean, you know, Kelly Wigglesworth, she didn't contribute a whole lot to this season. As much as I like her and I think she's so sweet, it didn't make for great TV. And you look at all the fans and people out there now, and they want to see gameplay. They're tired of the, you know, just play it safe game players. And, you know, they just don't get any respect.
Well, this is such an interesting contrast to me between you and Kelly Wigglesworth, because if I look at the two of you, you guys were both of the very similar age. I'm not sure how old Kelly was when she played.
Yeah, she's a couple years. So she's 38. I'm 35. So yeah, 3 years older.
Okay, so same sort of age. And you both come into this in the early seasons, you in season four, her in season one. You're both the runners up in your season by one vote. And Kelly has the, you know, sort of the reluctance to be in the alliance. And while you are part of the vote flip, you are also somebody who admittedly wasn't really playing the game until day 24. But you sort of are coming at this in very different ways, where Kelly is sort of coming back into it. And even in my exit interview today, she talked about how she was somebody who thought that she could change the way the game was being played. And you seem to be the person who has sort of evolved your thinking to be like, no, this is how the game is played now. I need to change what I'm doing.
Right. I am an old school player, but I am all about the new school way of playing. Like, you know, it's interesting that you bring up, you know, that I didn't play the game till day 24. That was the absolute worst thing I could have ever said. Like, I went in and I was trying to play the nice card, but Rob, so when they casted me, in fact, my final conclusion was, is they cast me and it said I was the edgy, driven Elizabeth Filarski.
Ooh.
Which I thought was so interesting, you know? And so, you know, I do genuinely, I love people. I care about people. I care a lot about relationships. I really do. But you know, when it came down to our season, one of the biggest things that I regret is not owning my gameplay. I really tried hard to just play up that super sweetheart, you know, that didn't want to hurt feelings, that didn't want to do anything that was going to make people hate me. When in reality, you know, I orchestrated that, you know, like you said, that first power move against the Road 2 players that were still left. And I wish I would have given myself credit for that, you know, on camera, because it was a plan that was, as soon as we got back to all of the tribes merged together and we voted off Boston Rob, we knew, Pascal, Kathy, and I knew at that point that we were on the bottom of the Road 2 Alliance. Like, there was no question about that. And, you know, we just went ahead and kept playing along because we knew that we still had the numbers to our advantage. But we knew very clearly, I had many conversations with John Carroll, and we knew that we were on the bottom of that alliance. And so it was just a matter of time, you know, and also having a volatile player like Kathy, you couldn't really say anything too far ahead or, you know, it can end up biting you in the butt. But I knew well before that, that that's what was going to have to happen. Mm-hmm. And I had had a conversation with Pascal in the tent, and I was just like, you know, we know that Vesepi and Sean will absolutely come with us no matter what, because they're on the bottom two, they're next to go. So we didn't even have to have a conversation with them because we knew that they would jump on ship with us. But Pascal was not convinced that we were at the bottom of the Road 2 Alliance. And so yes. I'm like, Pascal, we are. Like, you have to just trust me on this. And he's like, I don't know. And, you know, we knew Kathy would vote with us too. And, but we didn't want to say anything to Kathy too far ahead of time because she was kind of an emotional player in our season. So they're coming to us saying, you know, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And we're like, oh, we're just going to stick with the Road 2-4 because we just had to like keep peace. But that coconut challenge, the thing that was so awesome about that is, I mean, they completely sealed their fate. And it was Pascal needed to see that that's what was happening because he really still had faith in John that they were going to take us further. So that actually just helped our cause more and we were able to get rid of him. But that's who I am. Like, I am not a player that's just going to fall over and just allow something to happen. Like, I really, that entire time, I was able to make great relationships with people, but I always knew that I had the numbers. So me saying that I didn't play the game till day 24, that wasn't true. That's actually just the day that I had to start playing more aggressively, but I was able to still do that and still have numbers, you know, on my side. And there's no way that you would have seen me just, you know, roll over in that game. But yeah, I never really had to show that side of me, you know?
Well, that was such a great move that happened at the final night. And I know that you were very instrumental in that. I have my notes in front of me and I have here your quote where you said to Pascal, I'd be lying to my heart today if I went up there and voted Sean tonight. So we know how badly you wanted it. But now, in Survivor 4, when you played in that game, you know, there needed to be a coconut chop challenge to say, okay, here is the pecking order of what this is. And it's almost like spelled out to people that were there. And it's like, here's what's going on. But now things are very muddy. You have this group of 8 last night that we had going into the vote where it's like, okay, I know that us 8 are on the top. This group of 8 is on the top. And these 3 women are at the bottom. But there's no sense inside of that group of who's on the top. There is a question between Steven and Spencer and Jeremy. I was calling them JSS last night with Josh Wigler. And so we had JSS talking about, are we at the bottom or are we on the top of this hierarchy? How hard do you think that that must be for these players who, especially from the older seasons, to come in and be able to try to decipher what's going on?
I mean, you know, when you're out on Survivor and you know, it's actually pretty easy. I mean, to me, like, you always know kind of where you stand a little bit. I mean, you know, there's definitely players that you see together all the time, you know, that are constantly together and whether they're strategizing or not, they just naturally bond together more. So, you know, when there's that many of you, you'd think that it would actually be pretty easy to see that. So that's always surprising to me. Like, how do you have that many people and you don't know for sure that these, you know, these 3 or these 4 people are higher than you and that you're in the bottom of that alliance? That just really shocks me that if that can be really true or not.
So how did you see that group of 8 that was together? Who did you think was at the top of that group?
No, I mean, it is kind of hard from a viewer standpoint watching the show because they all kind of, you know, intermixed with each other. I was actually really surprised to see that Joe and Kelly Wigglesworth were so close. That really surprised me, you know, when they showed them, you know, talking on the beach like that. But, you know, I would say Joe and Tasha and Jeremy, I mean, I kind of thought they were at the top of that, because you don't really, as a viewer, you don't really see a whole lot from Kimmy and Keith. And Spencer, I love Spencer, and I love Spencer as a player, but you really haven't seen him doing much scrambling. Like, he kind of looks confused all the time, you know, like he's just trying to see where he sort of fits in. So, I mean, that's my take on that as far as just watching the show. And I'd have to imagine it's different playing.
So I understand the temptation for Steven, that we have his motivations clearly as he wants to make a big move, because even if he just rides it out, he went to the end with JT in season 18 and the jury awarded all of the points to JT because they felt like Steven was just riding shotgun. So Steven is out there and he's like, okay, I got to be the person who is the Arthur of my fate out here. And I'm going to be the person who is going to say, I made this move. I made this move. I made this move. Okay. I get that from what Steven is trying to do.
Right.
I'm a little more confused about what Jeremy's motivation was to go along with this plan, because I almost feel like for Jeremy, I think that he was best served by trying to ride it out with this alliance with everybody on the Steven and Spencer side, and then also keep things good with Joe, keep things good with Tasha and Kimmy. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that Jeremy went along with this plan?
You know, I actually was surprised, because again, when you're playing that safe game of Survivor where you're not in any jeopardy of being voted off and you feel pretty comfortable with your alliance as far as trust and all of that. I mean, I agree with you that I feel like, you know, Jeremy felt safe with Joe and Tasha and Kimmy and all those guys. So the only thing I can think of is, you know, just what you said, you know, with Jeff, is Jeremy's probably going to want to be known as somebody who did make a big move, and knowing that Steven and Spencer are both more aggressive players than he is, he probably thought, well, crap, you know, I better jump in with them, because otherwise we're just going to start getting kicked off one by one, because, you know, Joe, Tasha, Kimmy and Keith are not super aggressive players at this point. So I think he's jumping on ship with them just so he can have a shot at getting to the end and show loyalty to those players who are playing the aggressive game right now.
Now, Jeremy has two hidden immunity idols in his pocket, which is...
that plays a big part of it, I am certain.
It's so crazy to even think about having one hidden immunity idol, let alone two. But do you think that if you had two immunity idols in your pocket, would you play more aggressively or would you play more conservatively? Because now if you're Jeremy, and if you could use the idols up to, I guess, final five, for Jeremy, isn't it kind of like just, boy, if I could just get to final seven, then I could play an idol at seven, play an idol to six. Wouldn't you try to really just try to run out the clock and be more conservative? And if you're Jeremy and you're saying, okay, if I'm in this group of eight, why don't I try to run it down to, okay, vote off the three witches, boom, 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 and then vote off who's ever at the bottom. And that gets him to, you know, to go to final seven, play an idol there, or I'm sorry, play an idol at six, play an idol at five. Doesn't it seem like that would be the safer way to go for him?
It absolutely seems like it would be the safer way, but he would also be playing with people who weren't as aggressive. So the chances of, you know, the voting blocks, Spencer, Fish, Kelly, Sierra, Abby, those guys going after, if he were to stay in the old group and they were to all start attacking them, then he would have to play his idol sooner. But now he's shown his loyalty and trust to the other voting blocks, and now he can help them in voting off Joe, Tasha, Kimmy, Keith, and then he still has two idols in his pocket, which I really hope that he doesn't ever tell anybody that he has those, because he'll be set for the end if he doesn't.
Talk me through, why do you feel like he would have to play his idols earlier to go after the women?
Well, I just think if he would not have joined with Spencer and Steven last night, and if he would have stayed with the safe group, I think that those guys would have started targeting Jeremy for sure. I would say right off.
Who, Steven and Spencer?
Yeah, I think Steven, Spencer, Kelly, Sierra, and Abby would all start either targeting Joe or Jeremy, because they're both the biggest threats in the game at this point, as far as winning immunities, being strong. And so if he wouldn't have jumped on ship, I mean, right now, in my opinion, you know, the target's going to be on Joe, obviously, because he's just a challenge beast out there. And I think this way he's taken a little bit of a target off of his back, actually. So I think that there are going to be votes cast towards, you know, his old tribe or his old team, and he's going to actually avoid having to play his idol sooner.
Yeah, I definitely can see what you're saying, that maybe if Jeremy isn't on board with what Steven wants to do, then maybe it's the thing where Steven is going to decide to want to maybe get rid of Jeremy. But I do think that Jeremy could have disarmed this in the way that he did with Andrew last week when right. Andrew came to him and said, hey, we got to vote out Fish. And right. Jeremy's like, nah, that's not a good idea. Let's just, you know, vote out one of these women this week, or let's vote out Kelly. And they were, right. he was able to talk Andrew down. I feel like Steven's a pretty rational guy, and I feel like that he could have been able to talk him down. I do want to get into something else about Steven with this Jeff Probst interview, because, you know, we've established, okay, how does Jeff feel about big moves in this game? But Dalton Ross asked him, I guess I get why Steven felt like he had to make a move, any sort of move, to pad his resume. So he flipped on Wigglesworth and the others, but it seemed like an odd play for Jeremy if he was indeed in the power position of the tribe, as Sierra clearly stated. Usually people in that position want to stay the course and not rock the boat, since they see a path to victory the way things are going. Did that move surprise you? And what Jeff said was that neither move surprised me, but I am exactly opposite of you on which move I thought made sense. I think Fishback is so consumed with making a move that it robbed him of his greatest strength, which is to just sit back and evaluate and then make his best move based on the assumption that everybody else is making their best move. He's a very smart guy, but thus he can't see the forest for the trees. Maybe right. this will wake him up. Well, Jeff, which is it? Are we making big moves, or right. is Steven's best trait sitting back and watching the moves?
I thought Steven's move was, I did feel like it was really odd. I mean, when they were sitting in the, you know, tent talking, I was like, it did feel weird to me, because really, I mean, Steven didn't have a target on his back. I mean, it was clear that they could have voted the girls out because they still had the number. So I did think it was weird. And I do think it's all about padding his resume. But I do feel like it's weird that Jeremy jumped on ship, because, I mean, Steven could have been left out to hang at that point, you know?
Yeah.
If Jeremy would have went back, and Spencer would have went back. And, you know, I think Spencer would have gone either way at this point. I think he's just kind of trying to go where he thinks the, you know, biggest strength is. But I mean, absolutely, I thought that whole move was very strange. But I do think that Jeremy, regardless of which, you know, way he ended up going, I think he's safe regardless. But I do think that if this tribe or these voting blocks now stay strong and they're going after the other four, that, you know, he's not going to have to play his idol anytime soon.
Well, let's stick with Steven, because I love this idea of this runners up remorse. And while Kelly did not seem to have any of it, Kelly was right. like, you know, hey, I lost in the first season, whatevs, I'm going right. to come back and play exactly the same way here in mm-hmm. season 31. But it sounds like to me, you're more like Steven Fishback, where you're a runner up, just like he's a runner up. And you're saying, boy, I got to come back. And because people felt like I didn't play enough my first time around, I've got to come in and make big moves in my second time around. Do you feel like that? Do you have some of this Steven Fishback in you?
So I, for 14 years, have been thinking about what I could have done differently to win the $1 million. I mean, I was so close. All I had to do was say sorry to John Carroll. Like, it was just, it's so bizarre to me. These, you know, I've had all this time to think about it, but you know, I think, you know, going back to what you were saying, like, you know, Kelly Wigglesworth, I mean, she didn't campaign to get back on this show. I'm sure that they look back on previous players and, you know, she was a great fit because she was in the first season and she's still young and fit and she still got it. But, you know, she did. She went out there and played that exact same game. And, you know, I am a runner up also, and I've had all this time to think about it. And like, I don't want to be put in that category of somebody who would come out and play that same game, because that is not at all who I am anymore. And really, if I were to go out there and get another second chance, I mean, I want Jeff to know loud and clear that I would not just be that person that you pick from an earlier season that's going to come out and play a safe game. Like, I want to come out and play. Like I said, I'm an old school player, but I've watched every season, every episode. I'm a huge fan of the show, and I've thought every day about what I did that made me lose. So no, I wouldn't go out there and play a passive game like she did. And so, you know, there's a part of me with Steven that, you know, I understand his position of wanting to make a big move and, you know, probably be known for making these big moves. Last night seemed a little strange to me because, you know, he was in a pretty safe place. So he's making a move that kind of was out of context a little bit, I guess. I mean, because it wasn't like he was any threat of getting voted off. But at the same time, I mean, he wants to be known for that. And so more power to him, I guess. He pulled it off. So
now for you, you know, 14 years later, you said that you've been thinking about this so much about how you just want to come back and have another shot at the game. What is it about this game? Is it just the idea of winning it? Is it the idea of, boy, I could get that $1 million? Or is it that you're perceived as somebody who wasn't willing to do whatever it took to win the game?
You know, for me, Survivor is in my blood. I love the outdoors. I love the social aspect of the game. I studied psychology all through college. In fact, when they cast me to be on Survivor, I worked in the psychiatric unit at the hospital. Like, the whole social aspect of Survivor is so intriguing to me. And so, yeah, the $1 million, I mean, that's the biggest goal at this point. You know, I would love to play again to see how far I could make it. But just to know that when I was 21 years old and I was just this young girl, you know, very sweet, just, you know, I had never seen the show before I actually went on it. My sister had told me about the show. It was still in the, you know, it was the second year that it was on. And so I actually had been cast for the show before I had ever seen any of the episodes. So I was cast, and then Survivor Africa started, and then I went back, went to the video store, and I found seasons 1 and 2 on tape. And so, I mean, I knew about the show a little bit before I went on, but knowing what I know about the show now, I mean, I made it as far as any player can get. But knowing what I did that lost me the $1 million, that's what gets me. Because if I would have owned my game, and if I would have just not played the nice card, and I mean, I would have won. So all those factors, you know, come into me wanting to come back out there.
So let's just keep this idea going of that you and Stephen Fishback have this same sort of thing where you want to come back and sort of change the narrative. So hypothetically, you came back in some other Survivor Second Chance season, and while you didn't win, you came in 8th, 9th place, but you were really a mover and a shaker during the game, and you were somebody that, almost in some ways, like how Jeff Varner was perceived this time around, of like somebody who was really hustling when they were out there. Would that be enough for you for redemption? And do you think that that would be enough for Steven to, if he ends up going down in a hail of bullets somewhere along the way? But
no. You know, I don't feel like I'm anything like either of those two.
Okay.
So I feel like Varner came out, and Varner is witty. That guy is so funny. I love talking to him because he is so funny. So I'm not that funny. I'm not that witty.
Hey.
But Varner came in, you know, wanting to just raise hell, and he did. And it was great TV to watch. But I mean, look how quickly he got cut. You know, that's not going to sustain you in Survivor. And when I talk about like being aggressive and wanting to come back, I'm not talking like, I think it's kind of silly, actually, when they first get on the beach and, you know, when they talk about within 30 seconds they're making alliances. Like, that's never worked on Survivor. You know, you got to get out there and like get to know people and get to know what they're all about. Because if you're making strategic moves within the first 30 seconds of the game, I mean, you're giving your word to people that you end up not liking in a couple of days when you see each other's true colors, and then you're totally screwed because you have all these people with these resentments against you. So I'm not one to come in guns a-blazing like Varner. That's not me at all. And then as far as Steven goes, you know, Steven's wanting to make big moves, but you know, you saw in the beginning of the season, he really struggled with making connections with people, you know? And so he's very strategic, and he knows how this game is played, and I think he's a great strategic player. But as far as, you know, the personalities and the gelling and the meshing, like, I feel like I would not be the same player as far as that goes, you know? Like, I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'd come out there just, I don't want to just come out there to like make good TV and like say funny things that make people remember me that way. I want to go out there and play the game like it's supposed to be played. And I want to get to the end based off of whatever it would, you know, whatever I would need to do to get there. But no, I wouldn't want to come out there and be cast as just a character, you know, that was trying to relive her second chance by being funny or making moves when I didn't need to make them. That's not me at all.
So for you, the motivation is to correct the wrong of the final tribal council.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would just be going out there and just proving to myself and, you know, that I have what it takes to get to the end, and that, I'm not that same 21-year-old girl anymore. You know, I wouldn't come out and play the nice card to try to get the jury to vote for me because I think that I've hurt their feelings. You know, I'd go out there and I'd make moves and I'd own my moves and be a respected player in the game.
And do you think that that motivation is the same for Steven, or do you think that if he just walks away with this sort of change in perception about him, do you think that that would be enough?
No, I would think that Steven is wanting to win this thing, but I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I don't think he has a super strong social game right now. I think he's strategically trying to make some moves, but socially, I mean, you got to connect with all these people. There's got to be some sort of trust and loyalty at some point. And I'm not sure. I still need to watch his game play out a little more, I think.
Let's talk about this idea of the voting blocks and these groups of like twos and threes that are all around the game. Do you feel like that this is now the new natural progression of the Survivor game, that we're down to just super sub-alliances moving throughout the game?
This really kind of is the first time that this is happening. So it is hard to say. I mean, it's hard because you still have to have loyalties. You still have to have people that you trust. And so, I mean, this is a different type of gameplay, but I wouldn't be surprised here in the next episode or two if, you know, the voting blocks disappear and you end up having another group of five that overpower everybody. I don't think these groups of threes are going to last for very long.
I feel like that stuff like this has happened before, but I feel like that this is the first time that there's so many of these voting blocks in the game where there's at least three or four of them right now. And I think that's a byproduct of all of the swapping and the early merge. I think there's definitely times where you have, okay, these two people are together, these two people are together, these three people are together. But I feel like that this is the first time that we're having these groups that are sort of like moving independently of each other to some degree. And I think it's happened a little bit in a couple seasons before, but I think this is the first time that seemingly the players are aware of it too.
Right. I agree with you. And the fact that there's three different voting blocks going on, I mean, usually that is like that for a little bit of time, but it usually doesn't last, but this could be a voting block that could last.
So talk to me about these women who are at the bottom here. The three so-called witches of Sierra, Abby Maria, and Kelly Wentworth. Are you rooting for them?
I kind of feel like they're kind of like the mean schoolgirls right now.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, I think that they're the way that they're coming across, I mean, they're pretty arrogant, you know, just as far as, you know, making the remarks. And I mean, for Abby to make that remark to Varner, that completely Savage, when he got voted off, at least she made the jury. I was like, oh crap. Like, you're not playing a very smart game, because why would you do that? If you get to the final two, do you think there's any way that he is going to vote for you? No, you know, but it's kind of like this, like heckling and this just, you know, kind of, I don't know, just kind of like mean schoolgirls that want to just show you what they're doing. And, you know, it's working for them, obviously. I mean, they haven't gone home yet, but I don't see them staying together and lasting a whole lot longer if they don't stop that, because that's not going to win you any jury votes if you get to the end.
So where is the line for, you know, these women that are at the bottom? Because I know you've talked about, I've seen your hashtag on Twitter, no more sweet pea, but you're saying that you're not in love with these women at the bottom. So what's the line for you?
So as far as no more sweet pea, it's just like, you know, if I were to come back out there, I'm not a mean girl. Like, I'm not one to throw in your face and just be mean. Like, I wouldn't play like that. You know, I wouldn't be heckling people as they're already getting their torch snuffed. Like, no way, because I'd be thinking about that person maybe possibly needing to vote for me at the end. So I'm not that type of a girl. But as far as like, you know, the whole no more sweet pea, it's just saying like, look, you know, I was 21. A lot of people, when they think of me in the earlier seasons, you know, they're like, oh, she was so sweet and she was so nice. And I still am that girl. But, you know, the biggest thing is like, I want people to know that if I had a chance to come back out there and play, like, I would show my gameplay. You know, I felt like when I was on Survivor, I was playing against the players and I was playing against the camera people, because I was afraid if I said anything to the camera crew that they would possibly leak something to the next time that they interviewed somebody else. So, I mean, I kind of felt like I was playing a game against everybody, you know? So you didn't really get to see that other side of my personality. And, you know, if I had a chance to play a game, I mean, the game is completely different. And that's the part that you'd see that you didn't see before.
Now, this idea of voting blocks, I guess, is not completely far into the game of Survivor. Because if we go back to Survivor Marquesas, I think that that was a great illustration of a time when there were a couple of distinct voting blocks, specifically the final five from your season is one of my favorite final fives. And it's one where obviously everybody knows you and Pappy are sort of this twosome that's locked. You guys are never turning on each other.
Right.
And then there's also Sean and V, who is this other twosome that's never turning on each other. So you have this these two pairs which are working together. And then, of course, you have Kathy in the middle, and she has to ultimately decide where she wants to go. And she ultimately will decide to go with you guys at that final five. But when you think back to moves that you might have made along the way, or things when you talked about how, you know, wouldn't surprise you if any of these the three witches, or as we were calling them last night, Hocus Pocus, if they would turn on each other. Is that one of the things where you would say if you were going to play again, would you turn on a Pascal specifically? What about at the final four, where instead of going to rocks, would you consider voting against Pascal in that spot?
You know, if I had to play the game again, being in this situation that I am now with being married and having a family, I mean, you know, that's a huge game changer. And so I would just have to think, and again, I don't know, because I obviously have not had a second chance to play, but I would have to just know going out there that ultimately that is what I would want to have happen. But again, it's hard because you get out there and you do have these real relationships with people. And so I think that that would just be gut-wrenching to do, but I also don't feel like, I mean, this is a new way of playing. So people can't really go out there and expect to have that same sort of just those loyalties, you know?
Right.
But I mean, that's easy to say from where I'm at now, but being out there, you know, it could be different, but I don't know, Rob, that's kind of one of those things that I'm just not really sure.
Well, I think that there's an important distinction too, because not only is this an all-star season, but you know, that everybody in Survivor Marquesas is playing in a first-time season, but you guys really were, I mean, there was a love tribe, there was this idea that you guys were more than just, you know, people who were strangers playing on a reality TV show. And of course, that comes with the territory of it being such a new thing, whereas I think one of the biggest evolutions of the game has been like everybody who goes out there is like, I'll probably never see this person again after today. I might as well just, you know, stab them in the back.
Right. No, I would agree with you. Our season was, I mean, it was right after 9/11, and you think of how you were at that time, you know, it was like, we definitely had a love tribe and we won all these challenges. I mean, we didn't have to play the game really early because we were dominating. Right. I think, you know, we won five challenges in a row, and so nobody had to, you know, be voted off. But, you know, I did have like Kathy and Pascal. I mean, they were with me from the very beginning, and thank goodness. I mean, we all know that a lot of Survivor is luck. You know, when we first had our, the first tribe swap, thank goodness the three of us still ended up being together and we still had the numbers when we went over to Mara Amu. So, I mean, luck plays a big factor in Survivor. And that's just kind of one of those things that you got to be flexible. You know, you can't go out saying I'm going to play this way or this is the player I'm going to be, because you got to be able to just roll with it. And, you know, as the game changes, you have to just be flexible. And I guess that's all I'd say to that is, you know, as far as loyalties and all that, I just don't know what to say until I were to actually get out there and see.
But your season was a tight cast even after the show. How many people from Survivor Marquesas got Survivor Marquesas tattoos after it was over?
Yeah, our season was so close. And especially the row two, you know, we all were really close. You know, John Carroll, Kathy, in fact, when she went out after her second time of playing, she came to our house she came over to my house and we all just talked about it. And I mean, our season was so close. So I think a lot of it, like I said, had to do with 9/11 and returning players that come back but people who go out and play the game for the first time together. You know, you don't know each other. And I think the second time playing, everybody goes out and they they're ready to play the game, and you know, they already know each other. They kind of know, you know, what kind of moves, you know, the different people are going to be making. And so it is, it's a completely different game. But all of our season, we're all still fairly close. I mean, we've lost a little bit of contact, but.
Well, who do you talk to from your season? Do you still talk to Pascal?
I do still talk to Pascal. It's just a couple times a year now, basically on birthdays.
Because to me, he was the epitome of just a really nice man.
Oh, he is a sweetheart. He is just a Southern gentleman. He's just, he is a wonderful person. And I really like him, and his family is just beautiful. So we stayed in really close contact. I'd probably say for like the first 10 years, you know, and the last 4 years, we haven't stayed as close, but we do still keep in touch with each other. John Carroll, I talk to him, you know, practically every day.
Yes, I've noticed.
Yeah, we're campaigning. We both went on this show so dang bad. So we're just putting it out there. And so it's been really fun to strategize and talk with him. Gabe, I still talk with him, you know, every once in a while, mainly through social media and everything. He's got a beautiful family and a couple of boys. So that's been awesome. And then Sarah, I keep up with Sarah on Facebook.
Oh.
Hunter, you know, we all kind of check in with each other. So it'd be fun to have everybody get together and have a little reunion again. That'd be awesome. I saw Kathy when we went to Florida, so I keep tabs on her, and she's amazing. So,
you know, I have to say, I've been pretty impressed with this Survivor Second Chance group, because I know we've definitely had some, you know, bad blood between different people along the way. And certainly some stuff with Cass and Tasha a couple of weeks back. But overall, as we look at this final 10, it seems like that this group, if they don't love each other, it seems like that there's at least some mutual admiration within this group. Like after Kelly Wentworth came back, after she played the idol against Andrew Savage, like I have to say, I feel like that there doesn't seem to be a lot of animosity in this group so far.
I agree with you. Oh my gosh. I remember playing our season, and you knew if you were to stir the pot by voting somebody out, that would make somebody else mad. I mean, those nights were long, you know, but it's also really, I mean, the game has completely changed in that aspect too, because, you know, in our season, nobody talked, like nobody really scrambled when they were going to be voted off, which is so crazy. It's almost like you took it personal. You just took it so personal, and then, you know, you were gone, and then you just felt bad. And, you know, this season, like you said, Kelly Wentworth gets back and everybody's high-fiving her and telling her how great she did. Even people that, you know, she just, oh my gosh, it was just so crazy. But that's just how the game is now. And it's like you have more respect. And like you said, you're going to win if you play a game like, you know, Kelly Wentworth is playing. If she makes it to the end, I mean, she's got a great resume. But yeah, there's just not that animosity, which is really surprising, because I definitely would say that's an old school versus new school difference. The earlier seasons, it was more personal.
Nilia, did you see any similarity between the first boot of the merge this season and the first boot after the merge in your season in terms of the way that they did try to scramble a bit before it was all said and done? And I'm talking about when Boston Rob was the first person voted off at the merge in Survivor Marquesas, and the way that Cass was really trying to make something happen by trying to goad Tasha into a fight with her at this merge.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really feel like there was a scramble in our season. I mean, there was like a little fight, you know, between John and Rob, but he just knew he was going home. And so, you know, and it was really strange, and maybe more had happened before we got there. But I mean, I was only with Boston Rob one day, you know, so I didn't really see much of a scramble of anything from him. But yeah, Cass, it's interesting. Cass was such a different player before they all got together, wasn't she? I mean, she just was playing nice and making bracelets and just.
She was like the new Sweet Pea.
Really? She really was. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, that shows you right there that you can't go out there thinking that you're going to play a certain way and have these alliances with people, because Cass is a perfect example of that. Like, look how different her gameplay was and how different her personality was because she was with people that she actually liked.
Yeah.
But then the second she was, you know, pinned up against the corner with somebody that she didn't like, I mean, out flies whatever out of her mouth. I mean, she was ready to be that chaos Cass again.
Well,
but
Nilia, let me bring this back to you then, because if you're saying that, you know, when you were younger in Survivor Marquesas and you were with people that you really did care for, you weren't able to sort of pull the trigger and, you know, make moves against some of these people. But if you were in a similar situation or a familiar situation like Cass found herself in with people she didn't like, what makes you so confident that you wouldn't revert to some of the things that you want to change from Survivor Marquesas?
Well, the thing is, I did cast votes against people I really cared about. I really cared about John Carroll. But when I knew that I was on the bottom of his little alliance there, I had no problem voting him off. And I really cared about the general. He was one of my favorite friends out there. He, you know, kept me warm at night. And, you know, he was the biggest teddy bear. He was the biggest sweetheart. But that's what, you know, they were my friends. Tammy was my friend. Zoe, I love Zoe. Zoe was so sweet. And so we were all friends. But when we came back and I knew that they did not have the loyalties to me like they did before, I had no problem writing their name down, even though I did care about them. So, I mean, I don't think that I would play that game differently. It's kind of like, you know, be played or play them. It was kind of that same thing. I care about you guys, but I clearly know I'm on the bottom of your alliance and I'm not going to go out like that. So I will write your name down. And that's exactly what I did.
What is the general doing these days?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know. I've lost contact with him. I probably have not talked to him for like 8 years.
I used to talk to the general like all the time. Like,
was he smoking weed every time you talked to him?
He didn't disclose. I wasn't wearing a wire.
Every time I talked to him on the phone, I just heard, I was like, Rob, you can call me back. It's all good.
Aaliyah.
I'm not sure where he is. Last time I heard, he was doing some sort of canoeing expedition or something out on some island. And yeah, he's a great guy. I just really love him. But oh,
he's a nice guy, the general. Wow, what an expose on the general.
Hopefully. Hey, no, it's you know, I think he would tell you the same thing. You're fine.
Maybe we should have an intervention for the general. Can we do it as a podcast?
Hey, you know I'm telling the truth, Rob. You talk to him.
Going back to Boston Rob. Now, did the way that Boston Rob came back and played the game, you know, a number of times, has that also been something that has made you want to say that you want to come back and play the game, seeing Rob come back again and again and then ultimately win?
I wouldn't really say no. I mean, I think it's so awesome when people get to go back and play the game. The thing that's really got me just crazy about it is now that there's seasons with returning players. You know, before it's like, okay, one person comes or two people come, you know, and they've thrown a few people in the mix. But now that they're actually bringing back multiple players, yeah, that's what's got me going nuts because I want back bad.
I know you do. I know you do. That we talked to John earlier this season, and believe it or not, I can't believe it's been like 7 weeks since we talked to John Carroll, and he talked about how you guys want to come back and play together in a season, coming back into it. Would you be up for any sort of vote? Do you feel like you're ready to go through this sort of like lengthy campaign process?
Absolutely. I am so ready. Our youngest daughter's 5, and I have the most amazing husband in the whole wide world that knows that this is just in my blood and that I want to do it so bad. Like, there would be nothing holding me back from being able to do it at this point in my life. You know, before when the kids were younger, it would have been a lot harder, but I feel like I'm in a really good position now to just give it everything that I would have to get back on the show. And, you know, the thing with John too, I mean, we've been pairing ourselves up a lot together just to, you know, get this campaign going. But I mean, we both occupy very different spots in Survivor, you know. Mm-hmm. I was kind of known as the sweetheart and he was the villain. But I mean, he's witty, he's funny. I mean, we have so much fun together, but I think either one of us, no matter what, would be happy with the other person, you know, being able to get back on. It's just something that's just in your blood. So,
all right. You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was, have you had any interaction with Kelly Wigglesworth?
I have not.
Never at any of these parties?
No, I have never seen her at any parties, actually, which is really strange.
What about Kimmy Kappenberg?
I have not seen her either. I've tweeted her a few times, but
yes.
Yeah, that's it.
And so are you rooting for Kimmy as the lone representative of the old school people?
You know what? I would say yes, because of who she is and being old school. Like, I would love to see an old school player win.
Feel like there's a butt coming.
But I'm just waiting for her to just open her mouth and just get things going crazy.
You're waiting for the old Kimmy to come out.
Exactly. I don't want safe Kimmy. I want old Kimmy.
Yeah. Kimmy Kappenberg wasn't even at that Survivor Marquesas finale in Central Park.
You know what? If she was, I don't remember. That was such a whirlwind.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe she was, but I really can't even remember.
Well, I remember that you and Pascal were there at the Survivor Amazon finale.
Yes, we were.
I remember talking to you guys the night before at the at the hotel.
I do remember that. That was awesome.
Yes, I was so excited that, oh, Pappy and Sweet Pea are here.
I know. I was so excited you remembered who I was.
Of course. Well, I was, you know, again, like I said, I always associate you with that big move in the game. And I think that that was something that was very much in my mind in Survivor of the Amazon, where in a similar point after the merge, the final seven in my instance, that I was sort of looking at how do I flip this game around in the way that you guys did it a year earlier back right. in the Marquesas. And I think that it's nice that we have this through line of different things, that, like these moments in the game that have sort of changed the way people are playing to get to the point that we're at now.
I totally agree with you.
It was all part of that through line.
Yep, it is. And every year there's something else that comes into play. I mean, I can't even imagine, like, I mean, the whole Exile Island and, you know, all these different immunity idols. I mean, you know how paranoid I would kind of be going back now, going to challenges, knowing that there's just hidden immunity idols, like under a will in a card or something? Like, I would have to think, even though I didn't have an immunity clue, that I would be looking everywhere at this point. Like, I think that, yeah. There's always something every season that just brings new light on Survivor.
Well, the thing that happened this season is now this idea of this thing that Stephen Fishback has, where not only can he have an extra vote, he's going to take a vote away from somebody. And
Now
here he is in front of everybody. He dives into the water and he gets this thing. Nalia, how much of a target do you think that puts on his back?
That is a big target because... I mean, everybody knows that he has this. Well, first of all, he gave up a lot to do that. I think it put a big target on his back of people thinking that he was just completely safe, that he felt safe enough to jump off and to go get that.
So you think just by giving up in the challenge, you think that it made people think that he's getting arrogant?
Well, I don't even know if arrogant, but just that they would just think that he's safe enough to do it. I mean, it's like people getting down off of their perch for food, you know, it's like... You can't sit there being a player knowing that your butt's on the line and seeing somebody jump off and not think that they just feel completely safe.
Interesting. So to you, this is almost like this is the coconut chop challenge for you. And Spencer and Steven signal to you, hey, we're safe. We're not going home tonight.
A little bit. You know, I mean, you have to feel pretty safe to jump off and forego winning immunity for a clue that could help you at the next time. You'd have to feel pretty confident that you were going to be around.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have jumped off because if he would have been voted off, that would have been the worst move ever.
I don't think I would have jumped off either. I have to say, and I'm so impressed with Steven, and I sent him a text this morning. I just wanted to tell him that, you know, I'm really proud of the way that he's playing very aggressively this season, because I think that I would probably be a little passive and or a little timid at least at this point in the game. I don't think I would be at final 11 really, unless I knew I was like up against the wall. I probably wouldn't be making that move because I feel like there's so far to go between now and the finish line. But I said this on the Know It Alls last night. I'm just, you know, really impressed that he has the guts to do it, because in my mind, it'd be like, okay, well, six people are going to jump off this thing and I'm going to jump off and I'm not going to ultimately end up getting it. And especially because he's had such a bad challenge performance this season. So I have to give him a lot of credit for not only having the guts to do it, but the guts to think that he was going to make it to the buoy first.
Right. That's true. You know, he's very endearing to me. Like, I like seeing how his game has even evolved. I mean, when he first got out there, he was just like, I felt kind of sad for him. Like, he just seemed like, you know, he wasn't fitting in. He was just struggling, just having a hard time. And in my mind, I'm like, dude, you are a huge strategic player. You're like, you know, everyone loves you. Everybody wants you to be out here and play an aggressive game. Like, so it's fun that he's starting to do that now. I think he feels comfortable and, you know, he's willing to put himself out there, which is, it is fun to watch.
What do you make of Tasha so far? I feel like that she's somebody who I think is going to be a really big factor following this vote. Cause she was one of the people that didn't get to find out about what they were doing. And I don't think she takes surprise as well.
No, I don't think she takes surprise as well either. And she really has been quiet for a while. I mean, we saw a lot of Tasha come out, you know, in the earlier episodes, and she's kind of taken a back seat, probably just because she has felt so safe. But I can see her kind of being a little chaotic in these next episodes to come. I mean, she's going to want to find
Chaos Tosh.
Yeah, Chaos Tosh. I think that's very true.
Wow.
Yeah, I can see her trying to cement her place, you know, to feel comfortable again. So I would definitely be looking towards that. I think she's not one to roll over. She's definitely got an opinion, and that's what I love about her.
Malia, the conditions this season have been pretty brutal on the survivors. Now, I know you played in one of the toughest seasons. I don't know if rain was so much of a factor for you guys, but between the food and the no-nos, it was a really brutal season. But when you see the suffering that goes on, and I know for me personally, it sort of reinforces the you don't need going back there for that aggravation. Does that sort of change your mind at all?
You know, it doesn't, because it's short-lived. I feel so, I did tell my husband though the other night, I was like, you know what, I think the thing that would get to me the very most is rain. I don't do good if I'm freezing and I'm wet and there's no way to get warm. Like, there's no worse feeling. I mean, there were a couple nights on the Marquesas where, so to get to all of our challenges, we had to swim out into the ocean, into a boat, and then swim back to our beach. So we were constantly wet all the time. And if there was no fire, those were the worst nights ever. If you have to go to sleep and you're wet and you're cold and you're ornery, and I mean, that takes a huge toll on your body. So that would be the element that would just really mess with my mind for sure.
Yeah, it's really tough. It's the worst part about Survivor. I always say that, you know, the part where you're just cold and miserable. And it looks like this entire episode, this was like, you know, 2-3 days that they were just completely just freezing. And you heard people at Tribal Council that they barely knew, you know, what their names were or anything like that.
Yes, that was so sad.
Yes. And maybe it was not the best week to have two Kellys potentially on the block to go home.
Right. That's true.
Nili, I have a number of questions for you from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Mike Bloom has a question for you. Wants to know, do you sympathize with Spencer as another person whose youth was a large factor in how they played the first time? Now, here's Spencer. He's back. What is Spencer, 22?
Yeah, he's young.
He's a young guy playing in his second season. They call him the young lad. And now here he is back dealing with a lot of people who are older than him. I think the only person who's close to his age is Sierra. I think even, you know, Kelly is a couple years older than he is. So what do you make of Spencer? Do you relate to him at all?
You know, I do relate to Spencer. You know, to me, Spencer's figuring things out. You know, he went out the first season, and I think he's, you know, coming back the second time. I know when I was 21, I mean, I think I thought I knew a lot of things, but, you know, 10 years later, I mean, you look back. And so I do relate with him. I mean, he's in a very big world as far as this game goes, and personalities, and testing what he's really made of. I do relate to Spencer as far as his youth goes, because it's a tough game to figure out. Being young definitely makes it tougher.
Now, for Spencer, this is you know, new charted territory for him, because, you know, he's always at the bottom, at the bottom, at the bottom. Now he's kind of in the controlling alliance of what's going on. Do you think that Spencer is going to be able to handle this situation?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Spencer flipping around still a few more times. I don't know that he's really the leader at this point.
Do you see him potentially turning on JSS?
I do, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah, I do. I think that he has it in him, but I do think that sometimes he kind of shies down a little bit, you know? But I think that if he'll just be the strategic player that he is and let that come out, I think that he could twist a lot of things up in this game. He's definitely capable of it.
Okay, Michael Butler, O'Rear Jr. wants to know, who would be your Pascal this season?
Oh, my Pascal this season. Let's see here. You know, I could see Joe and I really getting along.
Can't be the Pascal, Nalia.
Like personality, or do I really have to pick the oldest person on the tribe?
Yes, it has to be Keith Nail.
So basically, you're wanting me to say Keith.
Yes.
No, Keith not be my Pascal.
Why not? Why not? Doesn't this sound like Pascal?
As long as you keep burping, I guess you're okay.
Yeah.
You know what? I love Keith. I think he is hilarious. I wish he would talk more. But no, I don't know. Keith's just cute. He's just Keith. And I don't know. He wouldn't be my Pascal. I don't know that there would be a Pascal out there. But as far as like somebody that I would like relate to that would be like, oh, he's got my back. I really like this guy. It'd be Joe for sure. But yeah, he's not old. So...
Yeah, with all due respect to Pascal and Mrs. Pascal, I don't know if you can have like the hunky, dreamy Pascal. That's a whole different thing.
That is so funny. Well, Keith's the only older one. I mean, Jeremy, but he's not really Pascal-like. So,
what about Terry Dietz? Could Terry Dietz or Jeff Varner or Andrew Savage have been your Pascal?
No, not Andrew Savage.
Why not?
I don't know. I like Andrew, but he just seemed a little too arrogant. He didn't remind me of Pascal at all. Dietz, you know, I met Dietz in Florida and I really like him. I think he's just a really nice guy, and maybe if I spent more time with him, I'd feel different, but Pascal's just warm and fuzzy. He just is nice and he just says all the nice things and makes everybody feel like they're the best person in the whole wide world. And he just has a way of just making everybody love him.
So. And that's like Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Are you team Joe?
You know, I really like Joe. As far as personality goes, Joe is awesome. So yeah, I would say I'm team Joe.
So as far as personality goes, well, what about the other parts of him? Certainly that body-wise, he's okay, right?
All I could think about was Joe's body.
Oh my gosh.
That's fine too, right? So what else is there?
Joe, as far as Joe?
Yeah.
He's just, I think Joe is loyal. And I think in the game of Survivor, you have to have loyalties. And so I think that Joe and I would get along really good because I think that we're both, I mean, we're kind of similar personalities, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you rooting for Joe?
Yeah, I am rooting for Joe.
Okay. So
I don't think he's going to last much longer if he doesn't keep winning immunity because, yeah, he's going to have a huge target on his back. But hopefully he'll stick around a little while longer because he's just nice. You have to have nice people in Survivor. You can't have everybody be like Abby.
Brad Talk wants to know, why do you think it's so hard for some of these old schoolers to adjust to the way the game is being played now? Is it really a generational thing or is that Survivor no longer casts these types of personalities? How would you play a second time around? So this is an interesting idea to me. Is it the people that they cast in some of the older seasons? Is it just that these types of people are not the super schemey people that might get cast on the show today?
So my take on it is back in the day when I played, I feel like the game was more about the survival aspect. You know, they showed people working and they showed them suffering and, you know, it was all about you had to build shelter, you had to find your food or you had nothing. I mean, our season, we had 200 to 400 calories a day if we were lucky. And, you know, we had to forage for our food and climb mountains and haul back big water containers through the trees, trying to boil it. I mean, it was more about the survival. And now I feel like a lot of casting is finding people. They go to the bars, they get online and, you know, find who has a big following. They look at pageant queens, things like that. I don't think have as much work ethic as we did in the earlier seasons. And so, yeah, they don't have to work as hard. And I know on our season specifically, we were workhorses. If any of us were to have sat down and taken a nap ever, we would have been the first person voted off because that's what votes were based off of back then. That's not the case now.
Are you a beach person or a shelter person?
I am a beach person.
Beach person. So that means you're scheming. You're not working on the shelter.
No, honestly, I am a very hard worker. I would have a really hard time relaxing if things weren't in order as far as a shelter and comforts and food and things like that. Like I would want to be a provider for my tribe for sure.
Okay.
But I wouldn't miss out on opportunities to scheme. I mean, if I had to leave all of that to save my butt in the game, I mean, there's no question that I would do that.
Sam Liardi wants to know, it seems the general consensus of Survivor casual viewers is that Wentworth, Sierra, and Abby are the villains and witches fighting to stay alive in the game. Is this a fair assessment? Is this a double standard against the women in Survivor? So do you have any problem with the women who are at the bottom as a woman being referred to as the witches, where we saw people like Malcolm and his buddies, they call themselves Three Amigos. Any issue with it being a sexism thing?
There's no issue of that with me.
Yeah.
There's really not. I mean, I think people just find ways to get offended so easily. And, you know, it'd be one thing if, I don't know, it's just, no, I'm not offended at all.
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily something that's worth being offended about, because I believe that it was Kimmy who coined the term calling them the witches.
Exactly. She did. So no. And really, I mean, they are plotting and scheming and doing little witchy things. So I think it's fine.
Here's Kimmy.
Now I just feel like we have to break up the little witches coven.
The little witches coven.
Yeah. So I think if a guy maybe would have termed them that in the beginning, it would have, maybe people would have been more mad, but I don't, come on people.
It's, I also just think they like the name.
Yeah. It's kind of endearing to them. I mean, it does fit them.
Yeah. So I think that is not anything that anybody should be worked up about, at least not that I've seen.
No, I don't think anyone should be worked up about it.
John Johnson wants to know, can you give us an oh my heck for the RHAP soundboard?
Yes. Oh my heck.
Very good.
There you go. It's so funny. Every oh my heck that I said on that show, Survivor put it on there.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I got home, I didn't even realize that I said it that much. I mean, I'm not one to swear much, but it was funny to hear over and over and over, like the challenge that I went to and we got to have the reward on the cruise ship. I said, oh my heck, probably every 5 seconds because they kept bringing out this food and it was so amazing. And that's like the only word that I could say. But after that episode was over, I was like, oh, wow, that needs to stop.
Yeah, I like that when you guys went on the cruise ship and then you got Jeff Probst's credit card.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got the dinner. And then, you know, I always felt like that Pascal was a bit of a cheapskate. Why didn't he leave them like a $50,000 tip on that credit card?
He left them. I can't remember what the amount was now. I want to say it was like $250 per tip. He did. It was awesome. You know, Pascal is hilarious. He definitely came across as a Southern judge, but that boy, that guy, he's got a temper like you would not believe.
Oh, I remember.
He is funny. He has really funny things to say. Like, oh my gosh. I don't know if you've had a chance to get to know him very much, but he is so fun.
I think the only time I ever had an interaction with him was that time that I met you guys right before the Survivor Amazon finale.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I wish that more of that would have played out in like the production, you know, cause he was funny. I mean, we would go off and we would talk and we were just laughing and rolling. He'd say things that were just hilarious, but yeah, you didn't really ever see that because cameras weren't around when those things happened. So
yeah. All right. Well, maybe one day we can connect with Pascal.
Yeah.
Yes. Good stuff. All right. So then, of course, we want to know from Sheldon Coupon. Hey, Sweet Pea, what is the biggest oh my heck moment of this season?
Well, I would have to give that to Kelly Wentworth last episode or the season before last. That was amazing. And I was so proud of her because most always people tell people that they have hidden immunity idols. So that was the most perfectly played immunity idol I have ever seen. And it was played at the perfect moment. And everybody, including her own alliance, was complete. I mean, nobody knew about that. That was the most beautiful moment. So that is my favorite oh my heck moment by far this season.
So we know, what is the oh my heck? Is it like a substitute for like WTF or is it a substitute for like OMG?
Like, oh my hell. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Amelia, do you still have the hat that Rosie gave you that said,
yes,
oh my heck?
I do. And I about wore it today. How about that?
Yeah.
I do still have that hat and I love it.
How was that when you guys did the finale hosted by Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah, that was so fun.
Did you feel like Rosie really was sort of like wanted to keep you guys at sort of an arm's length, or you felt like that she was really like, getting in there and wanting to like actually get to know you guys?
I think she wanted to know us. I mean, Rosie was like the biggest fan of Survivor. She gave us all cars. She had us on the show. I mean, she genuinely really, really liked Survivor. So, no, I definitely felt like she was trying to get to know us. She's a super fan of the show.
Do you think they should have let Rosie host more reunion shows?
No, I don't think so. Because it was fluff, you know?
Yeah.
It was just fun. It was like a big party. Now it's like Jeff gets down to the nitty-gritty details of, you know, Jeff really asked the questions that everybody wants to know now, the finale. So I think that it's, for that reason, it's better when Jeff does it.
Yeah, I remember I watched the Survivor Thailand finale, or like when I did a rewatch of all the 30 seasons, and then sort of like in that final five episode of Survivor Thailand, there's a commercial where Jeff gets on, and it's like, this time there's going to be no singing, no dancing. I'm just asking the questions that you want to know.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like he didn't like that.
People were probably ready to cry.
Yes, too much.
He's intimidating, Jeff. Like, seriously, he said, I mean, I had very little interaction with Jeff the whole season. You know, we just show up to challenges and it was just on, you know, so we never, ever just got to chit chat. So I don't know if that's part of it, you know, because you go to tribal and he's just this fierce guy and he's just swearing at you. And
we was swearing at you in Marquesas?
Yeah.
I thought he was in a good mood still then.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. No. You know, that's what makes him a great host. He gets people talking and it's okay. So old school versus new school, that's something that's completely different too, because Jeff is completely different. He flat out asks the questions that get people to talk now. You know, back in the old school way of playing, he was very, just would ask roundabout sort of questions. And so people could just skirt around it and, you know, you never had to reveal anything. Now it's like everything's out on the table, which makes tribal councils so awesome.
All right, let's take a question from Joe Salarte, who wants to know, Nalia, you and V were the first all-female final two. Do you think that jurors are harder on female finalists than they are on the male ones?
I wouldn't say so. I don't think so.
Well, people have often said that there's a little bit of a double standard, specifically with the women who are older, in terms of if somebody who churns on you, you are more upset when it's from a woman, specifically from an older woman, as opposed to when a guy, and specifically a younger guy, is just like, oh, he's just playing the game. But in terms of where we've seen a lot of the Survivor moms in the final three, they end up being more vilified. You don't think that there's an issue with that?
I don't think there's much of an issue of that at all.
Is it because that you were a young woman and you got beat by a woman who was older and nobody seemed to be that mad at her?
You know what? I think that Vesepia got some votes because she was older. I think it was hard for our jury to give a younger girl who is 21 $1 million.
Yeah, because they thought you would blow it.
Yeah, well, they're probably just like, oh, she's young, you know, Vesepia, like, I don't know, they kind of think that older and wiser, which, you know, there's some truth to that, I guess. But I think that she definitely got some of that.
Do you feel like that you deserve to win? Should you have been the winner?
I think that I deserve to win.
Why?
But I understand why I didn't.
Why do you feel like that you should have been the winner over Vesepia?
Because I was the one that orchestrated the big move against John. And I think that that was deserving of the $1 million, because that took, I mean, that completely changed the whole course of the game.
Did you feel like Vesepia was a good player?
You know what? Vesepia, to me, was, she never really did any, she never had any big moves. I mean, she was likable pretty much by people, but I never really knew if Vesepia was ever genuine with anybody out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think she liked people, but as far as the connection, I mean, her and Sean were clearly connected, but I didn't really get a true sense of connection with her with other people. I mean, she definitely was out there because she wanted to get to the end, but she didn't really make any huge moves to get her there.
Do you still talk with Vesepia?
I keep in touch with her on Facebook a little bit. Yeah, after when she had her son Jordan, it was years ago, but I went out there to see her and I really like Vesepia.
Yeah, so you like her very much as a person, but you think that she didn't do anything that was that great as a player?
No, I don't.
Earlier in this interview, you described Kathy as somebody who was an emotional player in your season. And that sort of, that seemed like a trigger word for me, that you think that maybe Kathy's not that great of a player.
Oh my gosh, Kathy's a great player. I love her, but she was so emotional.
In the beginning or the whole way through?
No, she was emotional. She got a lot stronger towards the end. And I think that's what Kathy evolved to be such a phenomenal woman and player. Like, I love that woman. But had the Row 2 tribe had a first vote, she would have been gone. I mean, it was just everybody knew she was bossy and she was, you know, bossing everyone around. And then she was crying because the fire wasn't made. I mean, she went through all kinds of emotions out there. And it was really hard for a lot of us to understand.
So when we talk about the regrets that we have from our Survivor games and the moves that we didn't make, what's the move that you think about that you think is, boy, if I had to do it all over again, what would you have done differently? Is it just Final Tribal Council?
You know what? I feel like all the moves that I made happened at the right moments. And obviously, I made it to the final two. So as far as moves in the game, I don't regret any move that was made. The only thing that I regret is had I had known that Vesepia would win me, which I really didn't think that she would. If I would have known that 100%, I would have taken Kathy with me, no doubt, because she would have definitely deserved to win the money over Vesepia.
So if you knew you were going to lose, you would have rather lost to Kathy.
Absolutely. Because I would have felt, I mean, she deserved the million.
Did you feel bad at all with Kathy when she fell off the post and you said, Kathy, your boob, and then she fell off?
You know, I didn't feel bad at all. And the reason why is she was hanging on by a thread at that point. Like, we knew she was going to be falling off pretty soon. And there was all these camera people all around her. And I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know if Survivor was going to, like, show her boob falling out. So woman to woman, I was like, hey, Kathy, you know, you might want to pull up your shirt.
Yeah. Little did you know, a year later, I would be on a season of Survivor where women would be taking their tops off during a challenge.
Seriously. Yeah.
And giving up immunity.
See how the game evolves, Rob.
More evolution.
Exactly. Something every season.
But then when it was that not only did Kathy fall off, but then you and Vesepia started talking a deal right in front of her. You didn't feel bad for Kathy then?
I didn't, because at that point, Kathy and Vesepia had already struck up a deal that if I didn't win, that they were going to take each other to the final two. So when we were at the very end, when we did the whole, you know, torch walk and all of that, there was a moment where the two of those guys walked off and I could still hear them. And they were talking about, oh, tomorrow, you know, when I win or this and this. And it says on camera, I'm like, you guys haven't won yet. I was pissed. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, seriously, you two are talking as if this whole thing's over. And that just fueled my fire even more. And so I knew that I had to win that night. There was no doubt. But at that moment, I was like, huh. Kathy just turned on me and we've been close allies this whole time. So I have no more allegiance to her. And I'm going to take with me to the end who I think that I'd win against, which was Vesepia.
Okay. Sam Liardi wants to know, how would you have changed your final tribal council performance in order to secure swing votes like John Carroll or the general?
You know, I wish so.
Take us back, because I'm sure most people probably do not have the Survivor Marquesas final tribal council at the top of the mental Rolodex.
No problem. So basically, when I went into my final tribal council, you know, most of the people that were going to be talking to me to give me their vote were people that I had played the game with, that I had close relationships with. So, you know, we've got the general who, like I said, he was a teddy bear. Like, we were really close and he was just such a sweetheart.
A teddy bear dressed in all denim.
Yeah. He actually, I was so afraid of him. Like, when I found out he was going to be on my tribe before we got to talk, I was so freaked out because he brought a voodoo doll. Like, this guy should be big and mean, right? He's got flat top and all these tattoos and he kind of had an underbite and I was so freaked out.
It was a bitter jury that season, right?
Yeah. It kind of was a bitter jury, but I think if I would have gone and basically what happened for those of you know that haven't seen the episode or whatever, I got up there and I just played the nice card. I thought, you know what? These guys are probably really hurt because I'm here and I voted all their butts off. And so they're going to be so upset, you know, and if I say why I voted you off or if I say, oh, I did this and this to get to where I am, that they're going to be even more mad. So, you know, I'm going to play the nice card and I'm going to tell them all how much I love them and I'm, you know, that I'm sorry that this happened and, you know, whatever. And I didn't play the game till day 24 because I was trying to soften the mood when really, I mean, nobody wins when they play that way. And, you know, that's one of my biggest regrets. I should have got up there and said, you know what? I'm here because of this, this, and this. I'm sorry that, you know, you're hurt about it, but I came out here to play the game and this is where I am. Give me your vote, basically.
But in fairness to you, you had only seen two final tribal councils, if you even saw the finales of Survivor Borneo and Survivor right. Australia.
Yeah, I only saw the first two seasons. I was out on the show.
Yeah, Africa finale happened after you guys even filmed your season.
Exactly. So I'm a nice person, genuinely. Like, I just genuinely care about people. So being in that position and looking at all their faces of just anger and sadness and hate, I was like, crap, you know? I need to, like, make these guys feel better. So I went out there just trying to be super nice and try to candy coat things and, you know, try to just make it look like, hey, I'm your friend. You need to vote for me, when that's not what they were looking for.
Yeah.
You know, those guys were game players and they wanted me to own my game. And everything that I said was so, so bad. I watched my final tribal council one time, Rob. That's it.
Yeah.
Because it's just painful.
So I've already seen it more than you have.
Oh my God.
I've seen it twice.
It is so painful. Ah. But that's okay. I mean, that's who I was back then. And I thought that playing that, you know, card would be good. And apparently it wasn't. So that's okay. I learned from it. I won't make that mistake again.
Sam McCanada wants to know, you and John have been campaigning very hard to get back on the show. If the two of you do get on together, are you worried you might be targeted for being so public about it?
You know, possibly, but there's been players that have been on same seasons, you know, Jeremy and Keith and, you know, Cass and Spencer and Tasha. So
would you vote out John Carroll?
You know, depending on what the game situation was, I would. And John would vote me out. Like, we both want a chance of getting on the show, and neither one of us are going to do the Pascal and Nalia thing where we just say we're going to always vote together no matter what. Like, that's over. You know, we both want a chance at this show. We're huge fans of the show. And so if we had to get out there and we, you know, we would play our own game. I mean, obviously we're really close friends and I love him to death, but if there's a chance that I could get further, he could get further, we would understand.
Jim Rosario wants to know, would you play again even if John Carroll wasn't invited back?
Oh, no way. I only want to go if he's with me. Absolutely. You know what? We are both, like, if he were to get on, I'd be so happy for him. If I were to get on, he'd be so happy for me. Like, we both just want a chance of getting on. And yeah, obviously we've been campaigning super hard and we have these... You're coming up with all kinds of crazy things, but absolutely. I mean, if I had a chance to get on the show, he'd be so happy for me and vice versa. Like, we're just super close friends and that's not even an issue at all.
So I'm trying to think of how could I help you with getting back on the show? I feel like that we need I think you're right with this hashtag no more sweet pea. I feel like maybe you need like a Twitter feud with somebody so people can really see, wow, Nalia has really changed now. Nalia is really not afraid to mix it up with anybody.
Do you want to fight?
I don't think you should fight with me. I'm trying to think of who would be good. I feel like, you know, Cass is sort of preoccupied. She's sort of like, you know, has several ongoing feuds with a lot of different people. I'm trying to think of somebody who we could get, you know, you really get into it with.
Well, the thing is, like,
Abby Maria. You said you don't like Abby Maria.
No, I do like Abby. No, I do. I do like Abby. I just think that she...
You better, because...
With me, you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a person to just fight with people for no reason, you know, but if somebody hurts me,
well,
or
that's
someone
who gets
that
on the show, Nalia.
Well, but listen, if somebody hurts me or goes after me or, you know, does something to me, like I have a big backbone. Like, I'm not just going to sit there and just be like, oh, I'm just sweet. So I don't want to say anything that's going to make them feel bad. Like, that's not me, but I'm also not one to be like, you know, screw you to Andrew as he's walking off after he's already had his torch snuffed. Like, that's not me at all. You know,
like,
so I don't want to be mistaken. Like,
you made it to the jury.
Seriously, that was so bad. So I don't want to be mistaken as somebody that's just like all of a sudden has evolved into this big bully, because that's not me at all. Like, I really, really care about people, but I'm just trying to say that, like, look, like I'm not one to roll over and accept my fate. Like, if, you know, if I need to, I definitely have a lot to say.
Okay. So maybe people in the comments could give us some ideas for people that Nalia could be feuding with.
Well, like, for instance, there was somebody in all of our campaigning that wrote and said, no, not Nalia. And I just, like, was like, too bad.
Too like, bad. Yeah. So yeah, sad.
Like, too bad. Yeah, it's just too bad. I'm getting on the show. I want on it. So bad.
Maybe if you want to change up your image and get people really sort of saying, like, oh, boy, Nalia really is different. What about instead of, oh, my heck, what about going with, oh my F word.
Yeah, I can do that. That's not me.
That could be the new you. Hashtag oh my F word.
Yeah, I don't know. I just swearing.
OMF.
No, I can't do it. It's still got to feel like me, you know?
Try it on. I'm just saying. So are you tight with all of the other Mormon survivors?
You know what? All the other Utah survivors, yes. So Sierra and I, we have hung out. We just did a morning show the other day. We actually, this is kind of fun. We own a food truck. We do like hand-dipped corn dogs and fried pickles, and it's so much fun. And
who does? You and Sierra?
No. Oh. My husband and I, we own it. So we'll go different places. So we had this big Survivor premiere kickoff party, and we have all these other friends that have food trucks. And so we had this big party up at Northridge High, and Sierra came out that morning and we did a big news segment. And then Jonas is from here.
Oh.
And Survivor Cowboy Rick is from Utah. So he came. And Todd, I see him not a whole lot, but every once in a while. And I love him a lot. And right. So, yeah, I'd probably say that group of us gets together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. What about Tyson?
You know, I have not met Tyson yet, which is so strange because we're both from Utah and I really like Tyson. I'd love to meet him. So. Okay. Yeah, we just have never crossed paths. I don't know that he really does the whole Survivor event stuff.
Well, maybe if you told him that you had a food truck, he would come down.
I'm gonna do that.
Yeah. Do you have Jonas in a sushi food truck?
I wish.
Yeah, that would be great.
He's flipping houses and stuff. So
what is he doing?
He's flipping houses.
Flipping like houses.
And, yeah, remodel houses and flip them. And yeah, he loves it. He does great.
Well, good for Jonas.
Yeah, I know. I love that guy. And yeah. Cowboy Rick, he's got a bunch of cows and he still lives in this small town and he's just running around. And Sierra, I mean, I love that girl.
Edward Morris wants to know, how would you handle an idol if you found one?
I would not show anybody ever, no matter what, because you never know how idols are played. Like there's been times that the idol's been played for the wrong person. And I just think, yeah, I would just keep it. And not tell anybody. There have been instances that I could see where, you know, if you were in a tight, tight group and somebody was going to be going home and, you know, you were going to be in big trouble. I think it's just, it probably is situational, but I'd probably say 90%. I would just save it.
Ken Crowner wants to know, besides John Carroll and others from Marquesas, who do you think you would want to play with if you got to play again?
That is a great question. I think it'd be so fun to play with Twyla. Twyla Tanner. I thought she was so fun. And she's a great character. She's a hard worker. I think her and I would have a lot of fun together.
Does she work hard and play hard like Zoe?
She does, actually.
Do you still keep in touch with Zoe?
You know, I don't know where she is. I think she lives in Australia.
Australia?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? Yeah. I love Zoe. But yeah, I haven't talked to her in quite a while. probably actually been 12 years since I talked to her.
Wow.
That's been a long time.
Does anybody keep in touch with Zoe?
I don't know. Apparently she has a Twitter because I sent something out.
Zoe has a Twitter? Oh, this is breaking news. Hold on. Hold on. We gotta find out about this.
Breaking news are happening now.
Is it real or is it one of these things where people are pretending to be her?
I don't know. I sent something out and I'm like, hey, you know, John and I are the only ones campaigning from our season. And somebody wrote and she's like, nah, Zoe has a Twitter. And I'm like, I don't think so. So I don't know. Maybe Zoe has a Twitter, but she just doesn't.
Okay, so hold on. I spelled her name wrong. So it's Zoe Zanidakis.
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 Zoe.
Okay. I don't know. Somebody send the link. I'm not seeing anything about it.
Yeah, she's kind of just disappeared, but she's such a
sweetheart. She's too busy, you know, working hard and playing hard to be on Twitter.
She's like does lobstering and she made this calendar and it was all these pictures of her like on the lobster boat and working hard. And then there was this random picture of her naked on a rock.
What?
I was like, whoa, wow, that's kind of weird. I just didn't really picture that with her butt.
With her butt?
Zoe's got a freaky side.
Yeah, more on that to come in our second part of this recap podcast. All right. So we will be on the hunt for Zoe Zanidakis calendars. I will put that next to my Dan Liu calendar up here on the wall. And then finally, Nalia, Mike Stevenson wants to know, can you send me a partially chewed mint? How much did people want to ask you about the men?
You know what? I get asked about that all the time. And that is one thing that I don't understand still. I do not understand why they did not take my mint. Because if anybody would have offered me a chewed up mint out on that show, I would have gladly taken it. So they're just rude.
I think that it was...
But I do have to tell you one thing.
Yes.
That is that I had 5 more mints in my pocket. that nobody knew about. So see, that's an example of, you know... I'll share a chewed mint with you, but I do have 5 more, but I'm saving them for me for later. And so Pascal, I told Pascal that I had them and we'd go on a walk to the waterfall and we'd eat a mint. And then we'd try to eat something really nasty like taro to try to cover our breath because I'm like, if they smell mint on me, I'm in so much trouble.
Yeah. Wow.
it wasn't a very, I mean, I thought it was a kind gesture, but
yeah, I think that Sean just had the really good confessional after that, where he's just sort of like, no, we don't want your half chewed mint.
It's like saying, do you want to eat this doo-doo?
Yeah, he was the best in the confessionals.
Oh my gosh, he is funny. And Sean, I love Sean. I really like Sean a lot. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
He didn't work very hard, but he's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, not everybody can work hard and play hard like Zoe.
You like Zoe.
I just feel like that was just such an oddball casting choice of like, I know Lynn gets it right. Like, 90-95% of the time. I don't know what she was thinking on that one.
Yeah. I don't know either.
All right. Well, boy, we learned so much today, Nalia. I feel like that revelation about the general might have been a top 5 all-time Rob has a podcast moment.
Oh, really?
Yes. Huge news. We found out about the Zoe calendar.
Well?
We came up with your new hashtag, OMF.
No, we didn't. Yes. No. Not doing it.
You had 5 mints in your pocket. So.
And in general, Rob, you should have come up with that a long time ago. Come on now.
No idea.
Oh, please. I'm not buying it.
All right. Well, Nalia, this was very nice to talk with you about all of these things. For the sake of this podcast, it doesn't have to be your new official hashtag, but if people made it to the end of this interview, could they at least tweet us with the hashtag OMF?
No.
No.
You can tweet hashtag no more sweet pea and follow me on Survivor Nalia.
All right. So your Twitter handle is at Survivor Nalia. Are you live tweeting the shows?
Yes.
Okay. Let me look at what you're saying on Twitter real quick here. All right. So here we go. Now, you have like a logo with you and John Carroll that looks like sort of like Legend of Zelda.
This is so awesome. So we've come up with our own logo and we are, for those people who retweet that and send it out, like we want to flood the internet with us wanting to come back. We don't care how desperate we look because listen, we want to be back on the show, right? We don't want people to be cast that just are casually cast, like maybe a Wigglesworth who was just called. And yeah, I want to go back.
So you're starting the Twitter feud with Kelly Wigglesworth?
No. Well, maybe. But I'm saying like we want to come back. Like as a Survivor fan, why wouldn't you want someone to come back on the show that wants to be back so bad?
Yeah.
So we're putting it out there. Like we are putting our names out there. We have these awesome t-shirts. We've got 20 t-shirts and we want people to retweet our tweet. So you can go to Survivor Nalia or First Survivor John and retweet it out. And we'll pick 10 people. We'll send you these t-shirts and they're super cool.
Wait, but you got 20 shirts. You're only picking 10 people. You're holding back some of these shirts?
Well, they're 20 shirts. So John's getting 10 from his. Oh, okay. And I'm getting 10 from mine. And we'll send them out and we won't make any more. And it'll just be these special little shirts. And if we get on the show, then maybe they'll be worth a lot of money someday, Rob.
All right. Nalia, if you don't want it, can I give OMF to Zoe if she wants to try to get back on the show?
I just don't think people should use that word, so no.
Okay.
You can give her naked lobster castaway.
Yeah. The lobster claw Zoe. All right.
It was awkward.
I'm sure. All right. So then also you tweeted last night, I too once had a shower on my season. I couldn't stop smelling my hair. Oh, and the mint, it didn't end well. Yeah. Yeah, they called you the princess.
Yeah. I was clean for the first time in like what, 24 days, and I smelled good and I didn't have dirty fingernails and I felt really good and I kind of didn't want to get dirty that next morning. And apparently no one else appreciated it. So
yeah,
it was labeled the princess, which was fine.
Okay. Well, Nalia, great job. Of course, you follow Nalia at Survivor Nalia. She's here. She's ready to go and tweeting up a storm. The campaign is on to get you and John Carroll back on the show. I'm telling you, Nalia, I think one of these Twitter feuds, I think, is really going to go a long way.
Well, as long as it's legit and it's not like some WWF fake showdown.
I think it'll get the whole Survivor Reddit going. It'll be really good.
Well, everyone just follow me and we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, Nalia, thank you so much. And yes, all the best. Fun. And this was really nice to catch up with you.
Good. I'm glad. Thank you for inviting me on.
And send my best to Pappy.
I will. Send my best to Zoe.
Yeah, I will. The epitome of a great guy. All right. Nalia, take care.
All right. See you, Rob.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Nalia Dennis. Well, that was very fun. Really enjoyed catching up with Nalia here today. And so this is going to be the end of part one of our recap podcast. We are going to get into part two with Bryce Isaiah. That is going to be our voicemail part of the show. We're just breaking it up into two pieces because recording these interviews pretty close back to back. And so Scott St. Pierre is going to go ahead and edit this one and get it posted for you. And then I got to take my mom to the airport tonight. So we'll have the Bryce Isaiah podcast up as part two sometime Friday, late morning, early afternoon for you guys. And that's going to be very fun. We got a lot of great voicemails coming up with Bryce. So looking forward to all that. And then, of course, I want to thank everybody who is using our links for Amazon.com. I know that the holiday shopping season is right around the corner, so we do greatly appreciate it when you think of us or you even bookmark our links for robhasawebsite.com/Amazon or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon CA. All of the great deals are starting, believe it or not, Thanksgiving is next week. Can't believe it. So lots of stuff coming up. And we have our big 2-hour Survivor coming up next Wednesday night. So a lot going on there. Next week on the show, Tyson Apostle will be doing his supersized podcast with me, and he will be doing both the recap and the voicemail coming up next week. And we're actually going to be doing that show, recording it on that Friday after Thanksgiving. So we're both going to enjoy Thanksgiving with our families. We'll have know-it-alls in its regular time on Wednesday night. And then Tyson and I are going to get together on Friday to record the 2-hour Survivor or the recap of the 2-hour episode coming up this week. So thank you guys so much for listening. You can go ahead and leave us some comments on robhasawebsite.com and make sure you subscribe to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.